All right, guys, what I'd like you to do is I'd like for you to turn in your Bibles to the New Testament, to Colossians. We're doing a series through Colossians called Our Life with Christ. And Colossians is really a good letter. I would encourage you to read it through several times and kind of grasp what Paul is talking about. One of the things that Paul is trying to address here, he's trying to do two things. He's trying to strengthen the Colossian church. He didn't start this church. This church started out from another church with folks that he had led to the Lord there. They then went and started another church, which was in Colossae, and they were needing to know about their relationship with Jesus, so a lot of the emphasis of this letter is about that. But he's also warning them, because when you are growing in your relationship with Christ, you've got to recognize that you have an enemy who's real, and he's going to bring by people to get you on the wrong course. He warned earlier about not letting anyone cheat you. And I'll be honest with you, folks, even in North American Christianity, we're not perfect, but there will be people who will cheat you out of the relationship with Christ. And we'll talk a little bit about that today. Because the focus today is don't settle for less. The emphasis of the passage we're going to talk about today is don't settle for less in your Christianity. What do you mean by that, George? Well, I have a couple points I want to make here before I get right into the passage, and that is that oftentimes I find that believers have a wrong idea about the spiritual life. A wrong idea. What do you mean a wrong idea? Well, it's not like somebody came up and said, here, this is what I want you to do. It's kind of a subtle thing. It happens over time. You can even start outright, but somehow you get influenced to do wrong things, and you think that that now is the Christian life. What do you mean? Well, here's my first point. For many believers, the Christian life is not seen as life-giving. For many believers, the Christian life is not seen as life-giving. So let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. So this morning, you woke up, whenever you woke up, you either woke up ready to take on the world, or, like there are some in my house, I won't mention their names, they're not morning people. They got to have a shower and a coffee first before you can even talk to them, okay? I'm not like that. I'm ready to go, and that makes those people angry, okay? Now, here's the thing. You woke up this morning, and so a battle began. Do I really want to come to church today? You know, I kind of got an idea what my day is going to be like. Maybe today I'll catch it on the app. I'll catch it on the app. I'll watch it later on the app or on YouTube or Facebook. Because, you know, I only get one Sunday. So this is battle that's going on. You know what I'm talking about? That's my imagination of what the battle is. The problem is when I have that battle, I'm the pastor who has to come and speak. Do you know what I'm saying? But that happens for me as well. So I don't have a choice. I have to come, okay? But for you, you could decide what to do. And so what's going on there? It's not life-giving to you. The Christian life isn't life-giving. So when you think about doing devotions, oh, yeah, it's wonderful. But then there's something that really is dragging you down about that. Or all the other things that are expected of you in Christian life. So for many believers, the Christian life is not seen as life-giving. And can I tell you why? Because somebody came to you and gave you a wrong idea about what spirituality was. Somebody came along and gave you a wrong idea about what it is to have a relationship with Jesus. What do you mean? Well, here's my second point. They see the Christian life in terms of actions to complete. They see the Christian life in terms of actions to complete. And so when you see your faith in terms of what you're doing, that's not life-giving. It becomes a drudgery after a while. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you see your Christian life in terms of coming to church on Sunday morning or giving in the offering or reading your Bible on a certain amount of days and serving or doing this and all of that, if after a while, that just, can I be honest with you, that gets boring. It just becomes routine. To the point that it sucks the life out of you. But here's the problem. That's not what Christianity is. Christianity isn't a set of tasks to complete. Christianity is a relationship. Okay, here again, let's get back to an illustration of relationships, human relationships. If your marriage was simply, or your relationship with your significant other was simply a list of tasks to complete, that would get boring after a while, wouldn't it? There's got to be something more there than, okay, today at 7:10, I've got to talk to them for 15 minutes before they go to work, and seem like I'm interested in what's going on in their day. Oh, you know, when they get home today, I'll help them with dinner, and yeah, I'll help with the laundry, and, you know, when we talk later and we watch that show together, afterwards we'll have that 15 minutes of conversation so that they feel like they're loved. And you know, that would be pretty boring, right? In fact, that doesn't work, does it? You see right through that. Relationships don't work that way. I know some people try to make their relationships work that way, but they'll figure it out after a while that that's not how it goes. See, the same thing's true in our relationship with God. The same thing's true. We say, George, how did we get there? I'll tell you how you got there. It was subtle. You were influenced there. Someone came along and distracted you from the true relationship with Jesus to embrace something else. And he's going to warn you about that today. We're going to look today at verses 16 through 19. And it's basically, he's going to emphasize two things here. We're going to see, don't let, that phrase is going to happen twice here in this passage. Once is in verse 16, once is in verse 18. But he's going to focus on the reality that you and I need to be on guard. You need to guard your relationship with Jesus. You ever met somebody who guards their relationship with the significant other in their life? They make every effort to make sure that that's guarded. You've got to do the same thing with your relationship with Jesus. Don't let something distract you. And I'm going to tell you right now, don't let church culture distract you. Is that possible, George? Oh, you better believe it. We're going to see here in a moment because Paul's going to talk about it here. So let's look at it together. If you have your Bibles, look at chapter 2, verse 16 is going to be up on the screen. Here's what he says. So let no one judge you in food or in drink or regarding a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath, which are a shadow of things to come, but the substance is of Christ. Verse 18, let no one cheat you of your reward, taking delight in false humility and worship of angels, intruding into things which he has not seen, vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind, and not holding fast to the head, from whom all the body, nourished and knit together by joints and ligaments, grows with increase that is from God. All right, so here's what we're going to do, folks. We're going to see that you and I need to take some precautions with our Christian life. We're going to talk today about you guarding the most wonderful relationship you've ever had with anybody in the universe, and that's your relationship with Jesus. And you're going to have to make some efforts. And so I'm going to go through this with you. I'm going to give you 6 points, and you're going to probably be surprised by some of them. Because as I talk about them, you might think for a moment, yeah, that happened to me. In fact, the first one happened to me. Here's the first one. He says it, verse 16. He says this, so let no one judge you in food or in drink or regarding a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath. The word judge there, a better translation would be condemn. Let no one condemn you. Okay, so here's the point. Don't allow others to pressure you concerning your faith walk. Don't allow others to pressure you concerning your faith walk. So, okay, let me just kind of give you an example of what I'm talking about here. As you know, I've told you before that I came to Jesus when I was 19 years old. I was a freshman engineering student at the University of South Carolina in 1985. I didn't come from a Christian family, okay? Now, my dad was raised in a Baptist denomination, and my mom was raised Lutheran in Germany, but we didn't go to church. We never went to church. We didn't talk about church. We were irreligious. Now, we would say we're Christian, but we didn't go to church. So, as a freshman engineering student, I came to Jesus. Now, I'll be honest with you. I just wore jeans and flannel shirts and T-shirts growing up. So, that's what I went to school. You know what I'm saying? That's how I went to school. That's how I went to college. So I get saved, go to a Bible study on campus, come to Christ, and I'm being encouraged to go to church. So I go to church to this little bitty, little small, independent Baptist church in West Columbia, South Carolina. And I would travel there. And I learned real quick, because the pressure was there, you can't come to church in flannel shirts. I've come a long way, haven't I? Okay. You can't come to church in flannel shirts and jeans. So you need to have a suit or a coat and a tie. So I go home to my daddy and I say to my daddy, "Daddy, do you have a coat I can borrow?" And he did. He had a coat, three sizes too small, so I put it on. And he had a tie. Now, you got to remember, this is the mid-80s, but my dad's suit and my coat, his coat and tie, were from the early 70s, so it was this puke-colored wide tie. You know, they weren't as narrow as they were in the 80s. They were like big. So I'm wearing that to church. Why did I dress that way? Pressure. Conformity. Some of you know what I'm talking about. So it's not just that. Notice what he says here. Don't let anyone condemn you concerning food or drink. So where you go to eat. Maybe you've been in a church where they basically listed what restaurants you couldn't go to. Ever been in a church like that? Can't go there. Can't be seen there. Paul's saying here, don't let something condemn you there. Look, don't even let somebody condemn you as to whether or not, and this was happening in the Colossian church, because remember, at this time, most of the churches at this time in history were made up of Jews. So they would be observing Jewish festivals, Jewish new moons, Jewish dietary restrictions. And of course, there would be Gentiles coming to faith. And so the pressure would be on them to what? Adhere to the law. That was always a battle in the early church, to adhere to the law. And so Paul's coming along and saying, look, with your relationship with Jesus, you can't settle for less and let people pressure you into conformity of doing certain things. Because here's what they would say. Well, you're not right with God if you're doing that. You ever heard that statement? You're not right with God for dressing that way. You're not right with God for going there. Makes me remember, I've maybe shared this with some of you, when I was a young Christian, I was in the National Guard at the time, and before I was involved with this college group, and the college group, what we would do sometimes on the weekends is we'd go and get a video, some sappy chick flick thing that everybody in the group would watch together. And so we went to this video place in West Columbia there, outside of Columbia, where University of South Carolina was. And as we're walking in, I see this old deacon from our church walking by. And I'm friendly because, hey, he's from our church. Hey, Mr. Bogan, how you doing? And his name was Bogan. That's a good Southern name, right? Mr. Bogan. And he would, oh, hey, how you doing? And he'd wave. And so we went in, got our video, went and did our thing. Didn't think anything of it. Went away for 2 weeks to Fort Knox for our 2 weeks of training with the National Guard. Came back. I'm in a prayer meeting on Wednesday. And in our church there, that little church, and I love that church, we would break up into groups of men and women. So I'm in a group of men, and we have prayer. And at the end of the prayer time, I'm getting ready to leave to go back to the campus house where I'm living. And Mr. Bogan speaks up and says, "Boy, what were you doing in that place?" "What place?" I just kind of looked at him dumbfounded, and I said, "Mr. Bogan, what place are you talking about?" "That video place. You know, I went over and looked in the window of that place during the week, and that's not the kind of place a Christian young man should be going. Now, what you watch in the privacy of your own home on cable is one thing, but walking into the store in public, that's another." Now, did you hear the hypocrisy in that? Pressure. Now, here's the problem with the pressure stuff. Can everybody keep the rules? Especially the people who emphasize them, right? See, condemnation is often used to force conformity. That's the first thing I want you to see. Condemnation, condemning you, that's the second thing. Second thing, condemnation is often used to force you to conform to some sort of pattern, thinking. It's all about control, isn't it? Now, let's stop for a moment. Let's remind ourselves of something here. When Jesus came and saved you, did he save you because of you? Did he save you because you were doing all the right things or you didn't do enough bad things? Was that how it worked? No. His forgiveness, was it conditional based on all of that stuff? No. See, this stuff distracts you. It distracts you from the true message of the gospel. Now, listen, it's not saying you can go do whatever you want to now, because when you know Jesus, it's just like with any other relationships. When you're in a relationship, you're not going to want to do something to hurt the other person, right? Isn't that true? So it's not like, oh, I'm whatever. I can do whatever I want to. No. You're in a relationship with God. But don't settle for less. So here's the third thing I want you to see. Look with me at verse 17. All of these things have a purpose. What is that? Verse 17. Which are a shadow of things to come, but the substances of Christ. Here's what I want you to see. Our religious actions are only a glimpse of a greater reality. So all of these new moons, these festivals, their dietary things, that they were Jewish, that they were being condemned into doing, they were only a glimpse of a greater reality, the greater reality being Jesus. So I want you to stop for a moment. The things that we look as judgery, oh, having to come to church, or having to do my devotions, or prayer time. That's only a glimpse of a greater reality. What's the greater reality? One day, instead of you praying, you're going to talk to him face to face. One day, instead of you reading and waiting for him to speak to you, you're going to hear him speak to you. One day, instead of gathering as a group of believers and all